Warning, the following podcast features views and opinions that are not representative of the collective views of the Whispers groups. Some of these views may not be suitable for children. Accordingly, the producers and hosts of the Missy AE podcast must insist that no one attempt to take anything that is being said as representative of the views of any of the Whispers groups.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Missy AE podcast. Tonight, we bring to you Sports Whispers Weekly, where we talk nothing but sports for the duration of the show. And boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to cover tonight. Now, I know people are wondering, you know, last week I said that there wasn't going to be a podcast tonight due to Thanksgiving week, but kind of a change of plan because turns out company ended up leaving a lot sooner than I thought. So here we are. We have quite a bit to get to. Of course, Survivor Series War Games is currently taking place right now on Peacock for the WWE Network, where we started off with an absolute banger of a match, the women's War Games match, which saw the team of Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, Shotzi, and Becky Lynch defeat Damage Control, which consisted of Bayley, Asuka, Io Sky, and Kairi Sane, within a good 33 and a half minute match. It was, normally when you think of like Hell in a Cell or cage matches or Elimination Chamber or even War Games, you think of spots of what sort of spots are you going to basically witness during these type of matches. And I'll tell you one thing, between jumping off the top of the cage with a trash can covering your entire upper body, also, not to mention another wrestler doing a backflip off of the top of the cage, I mean, there was plenty of spots in this opening matchup, which, of course, is taking place at the United Center. Not the United Center, the Allstate Arena in Chicago. And, man, it's so far, they have definitely delivered in tonight's War Games pay-per-view so far. Currently, we have Gunther defending his record-breaking Intercontinental Championship against The Miz.
No way.
And we also have three other matches set to take place later on tonight, with Rhea Ripley defending her Women's World Championship against Zoe Stark. We also have Dragon Lee taking on Santos Escobar, Dragon Lee filling in for Carlito after Carlito kayfabe suffered a injury last night following an attack by Santos Escobar. And we also have the men's War Games match, which is set to take place later on tonight, featuring Cody Rhodes, Seth freaking Rollins, Jey Uso, Sami Zayn, and the returning Randy Orton, or so we think, taking on the team of the Judgment Day, which consists of Damian Priest, Finn Balor, Dirty Dominic Mysterio, and JD McDonagh, as well as Drew McIntyre. And I got to tell you, if the men have any hope whatsoever of winning match of the night, they're gonna really have to step things up, because the women flat out delivered in that opening match. And you know, I know how they say that, you know, pay-per-views, you usually save your best performances for the pay-per-views. And so far between WWE and AEW, we've been seeing that. However, you know, with Survivor Series, it's a little bit different because usually, you know, Survivor Series is considered to be one of the top four pay-per-views in the WWE every single year. So usually you kind of expect more out of these type of shows. And I got to tell you, you know, Survivor Series, there's only five matches this year. And it seems pretty low for a Survivor Series. I mean, we have the two War Games matches. We also have the Intercontinental Championship being defended. We have the Women's World Championship being defended. And also a grudge match. And quite frankly, you know, I just don't, I guess I'm not all that hyped up for it, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, usually you see a lot more matches on a pay-per-view card, especially one of the top four pay-per-views every year in the WWE. But obviously, of course, you know, this is very early on in the night. There's also, not to mention, there's a big shadow looming over the pay-per-view because there is, of course, will he or won't he show up? And by who, you know, anybody who knows professional wrestling and knows the city of Chicago, everybody knows I'm talking, of course, about CM Punk. CM Punk, who has been around the wrestling industry since 1999, and he's bounced from promotion to promotion. He was once with the WWE. He had a falling out with the WWE. Then he went to AEW, had a falling out with AEW after, I should add that he spent quite a bit of time outside of the wrestling industry after leaving WWE, then ended up going to AEW for about parts of 2 years or so, from 2021 to 2023, had a world title, two world title reigns actually, with how short they may have potentially been. But his AEW career was pretty much filled with injury for the most part. So there's, of course, you know, that lingering question over whether or not it's actually going to happen with him potentially returning. There's been a whole bunch of teases, whether or not they were meant to be teases or not, or maybe fans are just thinking too much into it. Of course, the big thing is that it's definitely a topic that has really gotten people riled up. Now, we'll take a short break here. I got to reset something, so I will be back in just a minute. right. Sorry about that. I am officially back. And what I was saying specifically about CM Punk was it's definitely a little bit of a polarizing topic, so to speak, because there's the possibility of will he or won't he show up? And if anything, it could be good or bad news, depending on how you look at it. In my opinion, it's more likely than not bad news when you consider how he ended up leaving AEW to begin with, how he basically, he had a run-in, essentially, with management. And not just management, but he caused a whole bunch of problems backstage, apparently. There was a scuffle that he had gotten in with Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, as well as a couple of other things. Apparently, there was some sort of rumor that he had tried to get his former best friend Colt Cabana fired from the company as well. He also accused Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks of spreading rumors about him and Colt Cabana and leaking them to the wrestling media. And also, apparently, he said that Hangman Adam Page had supposedly went off script prior to one of their matches that they had in the company. And basically, it was a complete mess. And he ended up coming back to the company. And then at All In, basically, that's when the last straw had happened, where after he successfully defended his quote-unquote real world championship against Samoa Joe, he had been involved in some sort of backstage altercation with Jungle Boy Jack Perry regarding comments that Perry had made during his match earlier in the show, which was a reference to CM Punk denying Perry the opportunity to use real glass during his segments on AEW Collision. And after AEW did an investigation into the altercation, Punk was then terminated for just cause from his contract back on September 2nd under the unanimous recommendation of the AEW Discipline Committee, as well as outside legal counsel for not just Tony Khan, but also AEW itself. And Tony even said live on AEW Collision that the incident was regrettable and it endangered people backstage. And he also said, never in all this time have I ever felt until last Sunday that my security, my safety, my life was in danger at a wrestling show. I don't think anyone should feel that way at work. I don't think the people I work with should feel that way. And I had to make a very difficult choice today, which, of course, he ended up firing CM Punk. And ever since then, everybody was looking at Survivor Series on the WWE calendar, being from Chicago. And obviously, all the speculation had started because during his time with AEW, CM Punk had supposedly made a visit to a WWE event looking to talk with Triple H, who at the time, and technically he still is, in charge of creative and everything right now in WWE, now that Vince McMahon has basically been, put off to the side with the TKO Takeover Group officially merging the UFC and WWE. So now you have all these rumors about whether or not CM Punk is going to show up. And in my opinion, I think it would be bad for the WWE. Number one, he already left WWE on bad terms as it is, getting in a lawsuit against their medical doctor at the time. I don't know if he still is employed by the WWE or not, but Punk was getting prepared to go to court over being mistreated by their medical staff due to an injury that he had suffered at the Royal Rumble, where I think it was like a staph infection or something that he'd suffered. I completely forget the exact injury. But basically there was a whole lot of turmoil when Punk had left the company originally, and he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way as he left. And there's been reports that apparently most of the locker room does not want to see him back with the company. So in my opinion, you know, it's just WWE, while he will draw money for the WWE, it's a bad decision on their part, in my opinion, if they do decide to bring him back. I mean, I know the hatchet can be buried and whatnot. We've seen it happen before. Goldberg, he left on bad terms after his initial run in 2004. He ended up coming back. Granted, it was about 12 years later, but he still ended up coming back. You know, they buried the hatchet with the Ultimate Warrior shortly before his passing. So we've seen the hatchet get buried before, but it just seems that the older Punk has gotten, the more toxic he's become, so to speak. It's like everywhere he goes, that company loses some sort of, you know, some sort of momentum, with the only exception being the UFC, because when he went to the UFC gave him a multi-fight contract. Basically, it was he trained in the UFC under Duke Rufus, and he fought twice for the UFC, losing both fights. Although one of them was turned to a no contest after his opponent tested positive for marijuana. But still, though, UFC didn't really suffer much from having him fight under their banner, because it basically showed that, hey, you know, just because this guy is an accomplished professional wrestler, fighting is different from professional wrestling. So, you know, just the fact that you saw what Punk did right before he left the first time with the WWE. Now you saw what he did in AEW to end his time in AEW. And now fans want him back in the WWE. It just seems, I mean, yeah, he's going to draw money, but to me, it just seems like a recipe for disaster, essentially. So they're essentially playing with fire if he comes back. The only way I could see him maybe potentially working is that he mentioned during his time with AEW that he was dealing with amateurs and dealing with kids. And it almost seemed like he felt he made a mistake in going to AEW over working things out with WWE, because WWE is more professional. They're more, you know, there's a lot more experience. A lot more experienced workers in the WWE, not specifically the wrestlers, but, you know, the road agents and whatnot, as opposed to what they may be working, what he may have been working with over in AEW. I mean, there's been rumors that apparently AEW wrestlers don't even listen to any of the agents who are trying to, you know, who are there to basically help sculpt the matches and also help provide, you know, years of advice to these wrestlers. So maybe perhaps if Punk is coming back to the WWE, maybe things will be different this go around because he knows he's working with professionals, you know, not people who are going to go into business for themselves. But if I were to put my money on it, let's just put it this way. I don't think he's coming back tonight, but with the way WWE has gone about things, I think it's a big mistake the way that they have gone through with this because, you know, there's just – you have a crowd like Chicago who can be – they're one of those – that could turn hostile potentially if you tease something and it ends up not happening. Now, granted, keep in mind, WWE has not teased at all that CM Punk would make an appearance. They have not teased it at all. I mean, maybe they've put in references like calling the Chicago fans the best in the world, and CM Punk's gimmick was being the best in the world. There was something on SmackDown last night where they referenced one of CM Punk's old ROH promos. I think it was from ROH. It was very early on in his career that they referenced. And there, you know, there's been multiple references that have that fans have picked up on that have supposedly been thrown out there by the WWE. Whether it's intentional or not intentional, you know, is unknown, but the fact that they have their fans believing that something may potentially happen, it's a bad look, I feel, by the WWE, because if they go through with tonight's event and Punk doesn't show up, you could have the crowd turn on the product. And now, obviously, that won't really matter to WWE because WWE, you know, they're a global icon. So, you know, they make millions of dollars basically almost every pay-per-view, every event that they put on. So, but you know. Unless this is WWE's way of blatantly trolling the fans, which they have been known to do in the past, I wouldn't get my hopes up for a CM Punk return tonight, especially when you take into account that there has been no buildup whatsoever for this. Normally when somebody's returning, whether it's a surprise return or not, usually there's some sort of storyline sense. Like they fit into some sort of storyline. And with CM Punk, he doesn't fit right now, unless the only thing I can think of is maybe he answers a open challenge by Shinsuke Nakamura. But even then, you know, that just seems like completely out of the blue, if anything. So I don't know what they're going to do with this, but it should be a very interesting. I know, of course, you know, the show will probably be over at around 11, about an hour and a half from now. So there's still plenty of time for them to maybe perhaps do something. Like I said, you know, five matches seems to be pretty for a Survivor Series pay-per-view. We did just see Gunther retain his Intercontinental Championship over The Miz by submission in about a 12 and a half minute match. So that officially means that Gunther will now pass Pedro Morales on the official Intercontinental Championship reign record books, even though he is the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time. But as far as combined reigns go, Gunther will now, by virtue of this win, assuming he doesn't lose the title sometime within the next week, he will officially pass. Oh, it's not Pedro Morales. I'm sorry. It'll be Don Morocco that he will officially pass. He will pass Don Morocco for third all time in total days of holding the Intercontinental Championship, which basically the only two that will be ahead of him at that point will be his opponent tonight, The Miz, who he successfully defended his title against, and also Pedro Morales, who currently holds the total record for total amount of days having held the title at 619 days. But with that being said, though, we are going to move into our next topic here. Obviously, of course, if something happens at Survivor Series as it happens, I'll be sure to bring it up. But we have Alex joining me tonight. How are you doing, Alex?
Hey, what's up, guys? How's it going?
It's going good. I've been, well, pretty much talking by myself the first 30 minutes here. I was basically just talking about Survivor Series, which is currently going on right now, and nice. The possibility of CM Punk potentially returning to the company with it being in Chicago. And, you know, any wrestling fan knows that he has had quite the tumultuous past with the company, having previously sued their medical doctor over an injury that he had suffered at the Royal Rumble before he ended up leaving the company. And I personally think it's a bad idea for them to re-sign him, because if they were to bring him back, he's basically been a cancer anywhere he goes, essentially, at this point. But I did that maybe perhaps, like he said in AEW, was that he was tired of dealing with children and, you know, tired of dealing with people who won't listen to a single thing that he says. So maybe perhaps being amongst professionals again, that maybe things might be different this go around. But do you know anything, Alex, about CM Punk as a wrestler and
It definitely stirs up the drama pot. So it's going to be interesting to see how his return unfolds.
Well, yeah, that's a big question, though, is that whether or not he will actually return, though, because you know, there's been different reports back and forth. You know, some have said that he has met with management. Others have said that he hasn't. He hasn't officially signed, but, you know, with it being in Chicago, his hometown tonight, and also if people are taking into account as well the fact that his theme song, Cult of Personality, by Living Color, it just got re-released yesterday in a remastered version, which features actually a completely different lyric. It's like they basically re-recorded it. They re-recorded the song, essentially. And that's led people to speculate that he will come back to the WWE with that version of the song, considering the original version is currently owned by AEW, his previous company.
Yeah. Yeah, no, when they released a song like that, that definitely hints at the there's a comeback on the way. It's a little teaser for the people that are following.
I mean, it sort of makes you think, like, when you see all these different, like, anybody who has followed CM Punk's career, you know, they know about certain promos he's done or certain, you know, certain lines that he has said or whatnot throughout his career. And WWE, whether or not it's been intentional or not, they have mentioned a whole bunch of previous they've made a whole bunch of references to CM Punk over the last couple of weeks, even referencing one of the old promos that he did back in Ring of Honor. You know, they called the Chicago fans the best in the world, which his whole gimmick in WWE was being known as the best in the world. You know, there's been a whole bunch of different, you know, a whole bunch of different references having been thrown out over the last couple of weeks that has made people speculate that he may actually make his return tonight in Chicago.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I mean, if they just re-release that song, there's be a great boost for ratings. They're always clever in the scripts and whatnot and the plan, so wouldn't shock me at all if he comes back this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense to me, because considering the original version of the song is owned by his former company, All Elite Wrestling, so obviously WWE wouldn't be able to get the rights to it, but if Living Color re-releases a new version of the song, which they have, you know, then people would be, you know, they'd be able to use that song to bring him back. Although, I mean, they could obviously use This Fire Burns by Killswitch Engage, but that hasn't been used in years. Probably going on 15 years now that he's moved on from that song. But yeah, there's a lot of speculation, which, by the way, WWE fans, just an update, Santos Escobar did officially defeat Dragon Lee. That did just take place, actually, by pinfall in about an 8.5 minute match. So two more matches to go on Survivor Series. And like I said before you joined, Alex, five matches doesn't seem like an awful lot for a show that's supposed to be one of the biggest shows of the year for a wrestling company. Like the big four events that they have the Royal Rumble, they have Survivor Series, they have WrestleMania, and they have SummerSlam. And normally WWE likes to go all out for those big shows. And it feels kind of weird that a big show is only going to have five matches on it.
Yeah, there's something in the works that maybe behind the scenes he's getting ready to come out. That might be that might be the big surprise.
Yeah, there's that's what's got people wondering too, is that is there actually something going on? Because, you know, there's, like I said, there's been a whole bunch of mixed signals as well. You know, there's been a whole bunch of mixed signals, not to mention for the War Games match that is yet to place, they announced the return of Randy Orton, who is a surefire soon-to-be WWE Hall of Famer whenever he retires. You know, they announce him literally a week before the event takes place. He hasn't even appeared on WWE television yet since being announced. And wow. Now all of a sudden they're doing this, just to add on to the speculation, they're doing this storyline that he hasn't shown up at the arena yet. And the fans are already chanting CM Punk right now as we speak. So
he's coming back. Got to be. Tonight's the night.
It makes you wonder. It really makes you wonder, because It's I'll tell you one thing. This will be the biggest con I feel that WWE has made in their history. If they do a bait and switch like this and switch out Randy Orton and put in CM Punk all of a sudden, you know, it would be a complete bait and switch.
I think CM Punk on the way. It's what the fans want. And
possibly.
I think all signs are indicating that he's in route. Yeah, I think he's going to be back tonight, hopefully.
But let's move on to the NBA because we have quite the story that has developed over the last 48 hours, or maybe 72 hours, somewhere around there. The NBA is officially investigating allegations that Oklahoma City Thunder guard Josh Giddey is involved in an inappropriate relationship with a minor. As suggestive pictures of Giddey and an allegedly underage girl circulated this week on social media. Keep in mind, the age of consent in Oklahoma is 16. But this girl appears to be at least 14 or 15 years old. They're claiming that she's supposedly a junior in high school, but if you're a junior in high school, you're at least 16 or 17. And, you know, from all accounts, it sounds like her age has been marked as either 14 or 15, according to social media, at least. But a league spokesman said that they're looking into it yesterday when asked about it. Josh Giddey, meanwhile, is still practicing and playing for the Oklahoma City Thunder throughout all this. He declined to discuss the situation when he was asked multiple times by reporters yesterday. He ended up saying, "I understand the question, obviously, but there's no further comment right now. I get the question, guys. I completely understand you want to know about it, but just for right now, I don't have anything to say." And a Thunder spokesman declined to comment, and Coach Mark Daniel called the situation a personal matter, which, you know, in my opinion, you know, Oklahoma City, I feel, has completely fumbled this entire situation. You know, if we could tie this to Major League Baseball, with the ongoing situation going on with Wander Franco, you know, when that situation came up, Wander Franco was immediately suspended by the league and immediately suspended by the team. Yet this comes up with Oklahoma City, and Josh Giddey is still playing, even though there's suggestive photos. There's also videos of him apparently talking with the girl's brother. And the girl even posted a photo of her in front of a shirtless Josh Giddey saying, and I quote, "I just fucked Josh Giddey." Now, obviously, of course, it's very suggestive. You know, there's not really any hard proof that this actually happened, and there's not even hard proof of what her actual age is. But needless to say, it caught wildfire over social media as soon as it was posted. I want to say it was late Wednesday night, I think it was posted. But Giddey, throughout all this, though, he's averaged 12.3 points per game, 5.7 rebounds, and 4.5 assists per game this season. But if this happens to be true, that you know, the girl isn't the age of consent, and this is happening, let's keep in mind Josh Giddey is 21. I think needless to say, you know, granted, they've compared him to Karl Malone. When Karl Malone apparently did the same thing back in his playing days, but it was looked upon differently back then compared to how it is now. But what are your thoughts, Alex, on this situation, this ever-developing situation with Josh Giddey?
Yeah, right now it doesn't look good, but it's too early for me to speculate. If she said she was a certain age or, you know, if she didn't have proof, there's so many different variables. It's just really, it doesn't look good, but they didn't suspend him yet. I don't know if they're being too lax on that, but, yeah, he's going to face the music one way or the other. He's underage, and then if she has to tell the police that they did, in fact, sleep with each other, then he could be subject to arrest. Yeah, I just after Wander Franco, we still don't even know the exact answer for that yet. So it's so early to speculate. It's, you know, tough to really have any more to think about right now. It doesn't seem good, but kind of like the Wander Franco situation. Not leaning in the right direction, but, you know, until it comes out, you know, she might have lied about her age, but he could have somehow tried to find out about her age. I don't know. It's a slippery slope. Doesn't look good so far for him.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been confirmed exactly what her age is. Because supposedly, I guess somebody had looked up who the person is, and supposedly, I guess she was a sophomore last year in high school, so technically she would be a junior this year, which technically would put her at the age of consent, around, because 16 is the age of consent in Oklahoma, but supposedly she is in California, which the age of consent in California is 18. So, I don't know. It's real confusing right now. But I would almost say it's maybe a good thing, the fact that he's playing, that maybe perhaps there isn't much behind it.
Yeah, and I don't think, I mean, Oklahoma City, they've steered clear of any controversy through the years with people. You know, it seems like they're well run, so I'd like to hope that they would have done the right thing. If there was overwhelming evidence, he would have been suspended a la Wander Franco. If he's still playing, I definitely think it's a good thing. Because they could have tried to get ahead of him and pulled him. And the fact that they didn't, that kind of helped his credibility right now. His chances of it not being a crime. But, it, you know, we still don't know, though. But yeah, that's a good thing for him. It looks a little better for him right now.
Yeah. Now, I mean,
if they had him nailed on this, if they were going to be charging him soon, then he'd already be off the court. Because Oklahoma City, obviously their front office would look really bad if they're harboring a criminal, employing someone who's too clearly broke the law. So right now it's just, it really is a waiting game. The only thing there is, man. Time's gonna tell actually what happened. The only remedy is
now,
you know, see how it plays out.
Now the thing is, though, is that she is supposedly from Newport Beach, California. Now it's unknown, you know, maybe who knows, maybe she ended up moving to Oklahoma City, which, you know, I guess it would be a completely different situation if she moved to Oklahoma City, because, you know, if she is a junior in high school, then obviously in Oklahoma City, she would be the age of consent. So
yeah,
in that case, there would be no issues. But, you know, people seem to still think that she is, you know, that she's still going to school in Newport Beach, California. So, you know, the one thing that also...
If she flies to Oklahoma City and it happens there, I don't know how that chart, that law works. I think it's wherever she's from. Otherwise, you'd have people like politicians doing that a lot more, unfortunately. You know, you'd have a lot of shady characters flying out someone another state. Oh, well, in this state that we're in tonight and this weekend, it's legal, so we can do it here. Yeah, it's awful to think that way, but there's people that think like that. So, but if it's in a state where I don't know how that law works, I don't think you can just break the law somewhere else because it's legal there and then claim that you're immune to it. I don't know. It probably depends where it's happening.
The thing is, though, is that, you know, how could they be in a relationship and she's still going to school, she's still going to high school in California, and he's playing full-time for Oklahoma City? You know,
even entertain that idea. I know he's only 21, but that's still a statutory if she's younger than 18 or 16.
Right.
So,
right.
There's not a lot to do in Oklahoma, but I'd like to think a professional basketball player, a good-looking guy, 21 years old, making $20 million a year, could find someone close to his age, where he is, but I don't know.
Like I said, though, you know, we've seen it happen with Wander Franco, too. And obviously Wander Franco immediately got suspended as soon as the allegations came up. But this is what makes me think that maybe it is legal. You know, maybe she is a resident of Oklahoma City now. And, you know, if she's going to school in Oklahoma City potentially, you know, obviously that makes it a different case, considering that the age of consent is 16 in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. If she's still going to school in California, she has to be a resident where she's going to school. So that doesn't sound good for Josh if she's still going to school in Cali.
Right.
She's in a public school. She's got it. I would assume. I don't know which school she's going to. So there's so many different details that we don't really know all the info on. It's so hard to speculate.
Right. You know, obviously, you know, like you said, there's still probably going to be a lot of stuff that will probably be uncovered about this. You know, I do think that, obviously, the fact that he's playing still is obviously a good sign, because you would think that if there was legitimacy behind this, that, you know, technically he is seeing an underage, you know, it is an underage relationship, but that is if it isn't in an area where it's over the age of consent. Which, if it's in Oklahoma City, it's a completely different thing, as opposed to if she's still in California.
Depends on the state where she is. So right now, it's impossible to determine if it's illegal. I mean,
right, exactly.
Yeah, I just don't know. The fact that he's still playing makes it look better for him.
Right.
Not a good situation, but it helps the chances of staying out of it.
Right, exactly.
Whereas Wander was pulled it away, and now there's a special, like, task force in the Dominican looking into him. That sounds like it's really, not to laugh at a dark matter, but that sounds a lot more troublesome right off the bat. So, as long as he's playing, I think it's not good, but it's better than Wander's situation, definitely.
Yeah. And by the way, an update for WWE fans, Rhea Ripley just successfully defended her Women's World Championship against Zoe Stark. So her reign of terror officially continues, which means we have one match left, which if this is the case, this is going to be, unless the match is about an hour long, this is going to be maybe the shortest Survivor Series pay-per-view I've seen in quite some time.
Wow.
But staying in the NBA, though, an update on the regular season standings. First in the Eastern Conference, we have the Boston Celtics hanging on to the number one spot at 12-4. We have a surprising Orlando Magic team, winners of their last six games, including just recently over the Boston Celtics. Sitting in a three-way tie for the number two spot at 11-5, along with the Milwaukee Bucks and the Philadelphia 76ers. We have the New York Knicks and Indiana Pacers at 9-6. Then in the play-in tournament, you have the Miami Heat at 10-7, the Cleveland Cavaliers and Atlanta Hawks at 8-7, and you have the Toronto Raptors at 8-8. Meanwhile, on the outside looking in, obviously very early on, but you have the Brooklyn Nets at 7-8, the Charlotte Hornets at 5-9, the Chicago Bulls who are seemingly going even further downhill at 5-12. Then you have the Detroit Pistons and the Washington Wizards both at 2-14, which, my God, you know, it's bad enough that you lose that you trade away Bradley Beal, but good Lord, you know, Washington, they seemingly are, you know, they're practically in no man's land essentially for the rest of for the long term now.
Yeah, and they gave a ton of money to a total head case who doesn't play defense or pass the ball, who's already he was on the bench during clutch moments the other night, and they can't stand him already. Jordan Poole, totally overrated player, selfish player. They gave a ton of money to him, and they already want to get rid of him. Apparently, he's just like playing, you know, showboat, you know, street ball. They don't even really want him around yet.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely, when you look back on this deal, I'm trying to bring up the, by the way, you're back on now. You got disconnected again.
It was a little bit erratic.
Yeah, I'm trying to bring up this deal here. I believe, what did they get, like six second round picks or something?
For four.
For Bradley
for
Beal.
Beal. A lot of people are saying they didn't get really much at all. He's been injury prone lately though, the last couple of years and this year, but yeah, they got to get more for him. And then they turn around and give the world to Jordan Poole, who's just like, I don't know. Yeah, they seem like they don't really have a good direction going in Washington. They want to rebuild, but then you're rebuilding around a head case, Jordan Poole. So, and Kuzma, I don't know if you like Kuzma. He's kind of soft, too. He doesn't seem like a real championship player.
I mean, honestly, you know, I'd say if anything, Kuzma is maybe the only good part of their team.
Yeah.
Because he's probably like the one actual scorer that they have, a consistent scorer. But otherwise, they're basically, you're basically looking at a complete rebuild there for years.
Absolutely.
Essentially, you know, this. They're not. I wouldn't expect them to really get back to any sort of contendership for quite a while. I mean, they should have, in all honesty, they should have traded Bradley Beal when his trade value was at its height. And
absolutely,
the problem is they waited way too long.
And he got more and more injured, and the market kept going down, and they just waited. Like you said, you nailed it. I mean, how do you get that small of a ransom for a really great player in Beal? And then just, I don't know. And again, I guess Kuzma's the best of the worst because Kuzma and Poole are just kind of like jack-up shots. They don't really play defense. They just don't, you know what I mean? They're like role players. They're not even, Poole just seems like not a winning
right
player. And then kind of was lucky in Golden State and then wore out his welcome there. And Kuzma kind of apparently wants to go to L.A., so he's probably just clutching. They're just kind of a rudderless ship in Washington.
Now,
they're kind
now
of not
the
even
Western,
rebuilding directly.
Yeah, they're not even rebuilding correctly. That's the problem. Is that, you know, even their rookie that they got this year, Bilal Coulibaly, you know, he's only averaging about 8 points per game or something. It's, you know, for Coulibaly, it almost seems like he's going to be, for him being a shooting guard, you know, 8.4 points per game, 3.6 rebounds, 1.9 assists. In about 26 minutes per game. You know, he's basically looking like a project at this point in his career as well.
Yeah.
Wow. So, I think it's just basically showing that Coulibaly, no matter how good he was over in France, it almost seems like he was basically a product of working with Victor Wembanyama all that time.
Yeah. Seems like it.
And I think Washington may be looking at him now and being like, oh shit, why did we take him when we could have had other options in the draft with the seventh overall pick.
Yeah. Pretty risky pick at that chunk from the draft.
Right.
Not paying off yet, at least. Yeah, doesn't look promising in the early results.
Yeah, you know, for somebody in their rookie year, you know, he's putting up stats especially for a shooting guard whose specialty is supposed to be their shot. He's only putting up 8 points per game as a starter. That's not the type of development you want in your first in a rookie's first season.
I know he's really young, though, so we'll see. But he's more of a project. But, yeah, he's got to start getting better a little bit quicker than what he's shown.
Right. But, anyways, over in the Western Conference, we have the Minnesota Timberwolves on top at 11-4, followed shortly after by the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're at 11-5. You also have the Dallas Mavericks at 10-5. Followed by the Phoenix Suns and the Denver Nuggets, both at 10-6. The Sacramento Kings are at 9-6. Then in the play-in tournament, you have the Houston Rockets at 8-6, followed by the LA Lakers and New Orleans Pelicans at 9-7. And you have the Golden State Warriors at 8-9, rounding out that group. Golden State, I mean, that's kind of surprising, quite frankly, that they're mainly just hanging around 500, considering, you know, it almost seems like, even though they're ranked 13th in the league in points per game, it almost seems like maybe perhaps this era, this is maybe a true sign that the Curry, Thompson, and Green era is starting to come to an end.
Yeah, Thompson especially does not look very good. Every year they're not getting any younger. They're getting a little bit older, so it could be the end of the line for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Thompson, 15 points per game. He's, quite frankly, he's basically regret. It almost seems like ever since the 2016 season, he started to regress slowly with each season following that.
Yeah, and he had those gruesome injuries, Steph, that they've taken a toll.
Oh, wait a minute. No, never mind. I'm looking at this actually from – I'm looking at this backwards. So, well, actually, you know what? This is the worst season that he has had since 2012, actually, the 2012-2013 season.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, it's still very early, but he's only averaging about 15 points per game, about, I want to say, 3.3 rebounds per game and 2.3 assists per game. So, you know, it's still, these are not numbers that you normally expect to get out of Klay Thompson. But I guess the question is, does that sort of come from the fact that you look at Steph Curry and Curry is the one that's basically taking over that offense and controlling that offense every year?
They've always had a high scoring offense, so Thompson's always gotten his buckets. I think it's just Thompson's kind of just slowing down. I think the injuries are really taking a toll. I was watching him a little last night, and he bricked like four open threes in a row. They kept feeding him, and they kept getting the rebound and popping it out to him, and he kept bricking him. And then they were like, all right, enough play. Steve Curry's like a little bit like, okay, let's move the ball somewhere else a little bit. He's definitely taking a step. He slowed down.
Yeah, I mean, it's very unlike him. When you know the both of them are usually known for being the Splash Brothers, but Klay would often compliment Curry, but now I don't know what it is. It just seems like this year he's kind of taken a step back, quite frankly.
Yeah, he's definitely
not just that. So far, he's been playing four less minutes per game, too.
Yeah. You know, Steph has maintained his high level play, and Curry's definitely lost a step.
Actually, his 3-point shot is down, too. His 3-point shot is down by about 4%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still – the Warriors are a huge question mark still at this point. You know, it's very surprising to see them hovering around 500. Then you have the L.A. Clippers at 6-8. Then that's where it drastically trails off because then you have the Portland Trail Blazers and the Utah Jazz at 4-11. The Memphis Grizzlies at 3-12, and the San Antonio Spurs at 3-13. And, you know, it's interesting when you look at San Antonio because obviously they have Victor Wembanyama, who a lot of people are looking at as the potential rookie of the year. But I think the big question to look at that is, does their record maybe play a little bit of a role into whether or not he gets Rookie of the Year?
I don't know if it's impacted the Rookie of the Year race is traditional through the years, but he's got a lot of progress to make still. So, I don't know if the record can impact that race.
Because right now he's averaging about 19 points per game, 9.4 rebounds, 2.6 assists. I mean, he's a giant, you know, 7'4". I mean, he's definitely living, like, I wouldn't say he's not living up to the hype of being, you know, the next LeBron James yet, but he's, you know, he's definitely proving at least that he was deserving of being drafted first overall. So far, the problem with San Antonio is there's just way too much work that needs to be done to that roster. Because, Wembanyama isn't going to save it alone.
No, it's his first year playing in America. I mean, they're so young. Yeah, that next year will be a lot better barometer on how to really judge them. They're just, this is year one of them really starting over.
It's definitely, it's definitely a big work in progress.
Yeah, I agree. They got a great coach though, and he's shown that he's going to be really good. He's just still getting acclimated to the game over here. But yeah, I mean, you can't teach size, but he's got plenty of skills and plenty of size. He could be an all-time player.
Yeah. Now. Of course, obviously, we have the we just went through the NBA stats or the NBA standings. But if we look at the in-season tournament, on the other hand, The in-season tournament is as follows. So far, teams who have booked themselves into the next round, the Indiana Pacers, who went a perfect 4-0 in Group A, they have officially advanced, with the Detroit Pistons being eliminated from that group. The LA Lakers have officially advanced in Group A of the West. So far, it's basically been the Pacers and the Lakers that have locked in their spots officially. Teams that are still in the running, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Philadelphia 76ers, and the Atlanta Hawks, but it all depends on what happens. If the Hawks win against the Cavaliers, then it's going to get very interesting. But if the Cavaliers win, I think Cleveland locks it up for that second spot in Group A. In Group B, the Bucks are 3-0, so assuming they beat Miami, they'll probably lock in their spot. The Knicks, they need to beat Charlotte, and I believe they need a little bit of help. But if they beat Charlotte, I think they may potentially lock in their spot as long as the Heat don't win. Group C, I believe Orlando has, just based off of differential, I believe Orlando has locked in their spot, even though it's not officially confirmed yet. The Boston Celtics and the Brooklyn Nets are at 2-1. Boston needs to basically blow out the Chicago Bulls, and they need to hope that Brooklyn only beats Toronto by a little bit in order for them to potentially advance. Toronto and the Bulls, meanwhile, have been eliminated. Still alive in the West, we have the Phoenix Suns at 3-1, which I believe, I don't know what their whole thing is when it comes to their tiebreaker. The New Orleans Pelicans lead Group B at a 3-1 record. They need Houston to lose to Dallas in order to officially clinch. Otherwise, it'll be based off of point differential. Denver, surprisingly, has been eliminated with a 2-2 record. Dallas and the Clippers have also been eliminated. For Group C, the Sacramento Kings they have a 3-0 record right now. So if they beat Golden State, they're in. But otherwise, if they don't, it might get a little bit tricky and may depend on point differential, because Minnesota and Golden State are still alive in there as well. So, needless to say, Alex, you know, this in-season tournament, a lot of people may not have been taking it seriously, but it really kind of feels like there's some sort of extra, like, there's some sort of extra feeling, essentially, watching an in-season tournament take place.
Yeah, I think it's added some, a little bit more excitement to it. Something different for the fans to enjoy. I'm still a little confused how it's working, but it's been pretty cool. I like the court designs, too, for what it's worth. But, yeah, I mean, it's fun seeing teams like Orlando get out to a hot start. That was surprising. They knocked out Boston. Boston will be in great shape, but, yeah, I think Orlando's for real this year, definitely. And, yeah, it's added some extra juice to some of these games. I find it interesting how they've kind of staggered it, though, where it's just like every couple of weeks they're doing it for a weekend? Or I still don't know how the whole – does it last all season?
For the group stage, it was Tuesdays and Fridays that they were doing them.
Okay.
I don't know what it's going to be. I don't know what it's going to be like moving forward, though.
When does it conclude? When is it over? You don't know when it's done?
I don't know. Let me see. Championship. It says the championship game is on December 9th. So I'm assuming that once they move on to the quarterfinals, it basically becomes a knockout-style tournament. Because the quarterfinals, says here, begins on December 4th. So it's basically a five-day tournament once it hits the quarterfinals.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a good addition to the league. I'm still going to be watching a lot more focused on the major championship, but it's been good. Got some
right.
some explosiveness, some extra interest to the game.
Yeah. Now, we do have our official, moving over to baseball, we do have the official Hall of Fame ballot having been officially released this past week. Gary Sheffield is the only candidate entering his final year of eligibility. I don't know exactly what his percentage was last year.
Oh, this guy?
Yeah, okay, so it was 55%, and he has to make 75%. So basically, he has to have a jump of 20% in order to make it in this final year of candidacy for the MLB Hall of Fame. Otherwise, he'll go over to the modern day committee.
Oh, yeah. I know it's different. He was one of my favorite players to watch. He would just destroy the ball. He was a devastating hitter. But no, it's up to the committee. Yeah, and if it's his last shot, he's 20% higher. It's not looking great for him. But what a feared hitter he was in his prime.
Now, we do have a whole bunch of first-time candidates on this ballot. Jose Bautista, Adrian Beltre, Bartolo Colon, Adrian Gonzalez, Matt Holliday, Victor Martinez, Joe Mauer, Brandon Phillips, Jose Reyes, James Shields, Chase Utley, and David Wright are the basically the first-timers this year, joining Bobby Abreu, Carlos Beltran, Mark Burley, Todd Helton, Torrey Hunter, Andrew Jones, Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, K-Rod, Francisco Rodriguez, Jimmy Rollins, Omar Vizquel, and Billy Wagner on the current ballot. So, I mean, what do you think, Alex? Is there anybody, let's start with the first timers. Is there anybody that stands out to you that you think could potentially make a case for maybe a first time, a first ballot Hall of Famer?
That's so tough. I don't know the stats in front of me, but Pettit's got the asterisk because of Royds, and so does A-Rod. So, to me, sorry, guys. Not this time of this, unless they adjust that. And then other than that, closers not too often. So Wagner might be a very long shot to make it in. Corey Hunter, Spider-Man, I'd love to see him get in. Andrew Jones is maybe the best defensive center fielder. You know what I mean? Both those guys, along, you know, other than
right.
Willie Mays, they're right up there for best defensive outfielders ever. I don't know if Torrey has the offensive stats or Andrew Jones has the consistency long-term, but they kind of stand out to me. I'd love to see Manny Ramirez get in. Did he ever get
Manny,
officially pinched? He's got that kind of cloud hanging over him with some of that stuff.
The thing with Manny is he's basically been in almost no man's land when it comes to when it comes to his candidacy, like, he didn't really gain the amount of votes that he really needed to be on track towards an eventual towards an eventual induction that he should have had last year. He didn't really gain the amount of votes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so, I mean, I think either Torrey or Andrew, I don't know. No one really totally stands out to me. A-Rod would have, but he got busted for Roy, so no super.
Right.
So I just, no one really blows me away for first ballot, personally. What do you think? You think any of those guys get in?
I mean, you look at Beltre, granted 286, but you look at 3,166 hits, 477 homers, 1,707 RBIs, four-time All-Star, five-time Gold Glover, a four-time Silver Slugger Award. He's also he also led the league in home runs in 2004. I mean, I don't know if I would say first ballot, but I think eventually he might get in.
I agree.
Amongst the first-timers. Joe Mauer, I think simply because of the fact that he's a former MVP, time All-Star. He ended his career with a .306 batting average, 2,123 hits, 143 homers, and 923 RBIs. And keep in mind, he was a catcher. So, you know, catchers aren't really known for their power, so to speak.
Yep. You're talking Mauer?
Yeah.
Yeah, the problem is, though, he had three or four or five years. And remember when he finished DHing? For, like, half a dozen years, he just had, like, five, six, seven home runs a year. He really went south near the end of his career, so that might really tarnish his ability to get in. He had a couple of just, like, very average years. Like, I remember four or five where they almost, he was, like, Mr. Twin, and by the time they wanted him to retire. They had to basically get him to retire. Like, for 4 or 5 years, he just, like, went south totally stat-wise.
Right.
Kind of an ugly ending for him. That's what unfortunately, he started off so well. And he got really injured.
Yeah.
Started off incredible. You know, he's going to be like a transcendent catcher, and he just got brutalized by his injuries by the end. Back issues. He just stopped producing for like almost maybe a half decade. He didn't have good stats for 4 or 5 years. Really hurt his chances.
Yeah. Yeah, but
like a flat hitter.
You know, if we take a look, though, at some of the records that he has. Hang on a minute. If this thing would scroll. He does hold a couple of single-season records. He set the record for highest single-season batting average for a catcher with .365. Which he set back in 2009, the highest single season on base percentage for a catcher at .444, which he also set that same exact year. His career on base percentage is the highest among major league catchers with a minimum of 500 games played. He's also the first AL catcher to win a batting title, and he also holds the record for most batting titles by a catcher in a career with 3. Which he won back in 2006, 2008, and 2009. Not to mention a 3-time Gold Glove Award winner. I mentioned he's a former MVP as well, 5-time Silver Slugger. So, you know, I mean, maybe he might have a shot. I don't know if it'll be first ballot, but I think he might have a shot as well. Amongst this incoming class.
Yeah, he could. Might just take a little bit of time, I think.
Yeah. You know, I would have said Adrian Gonzalez if his career didn't finish so shitty like it did. I mean, it seemed like once he left San Diego and he went to Boston, it's like all of a sudden his career went completely downhill.
And he went cut. He remember he got cut by the Mets. That was just the lowest of the low. You know, you're done when that happens.
Right.
He did win two.
He did win a gold glove though with the Dodgers though in the 5 years that he spent in LA. But yeah, you know, it's just looking at how his career started and how it ended. I think Gonzalez is probably out of it. I wouldn't see him making it at all. I don't think Jose Bautista has much of a shot. I don't know. Let me see where. Oh yeah, hell no. 247. No. 247. Three. Yeah. No. Forget about Jose Bautista.
He was hitting like Joey Bats has hit like 190 for the last couple of years.
Yeah. And, I'm sorry. That's not happening. How about Matt Holliday though? 299. Just shy of 2,100 hits, 316 homers, 1,220 RBIs, seven-time All-Star. He won the World Series in 2011 with St. Louis, former MVP of the NLCS. He's a former batting champion, former RBI leader, and a four-time Silver Slugger. I would almost be on – I think Matt Holliday may be one of those 50-50 type of people. Like, maybe he may keep himself on the ballot.
Yep.
He may keep himself on the ballot, but whether or not he'll actually make it after 10 or before 10 times, I don't know. Victor Martinez, I don't really see much of a case for him, quite frankly. Even though he is a former Boston Red Sox, the numbers aren't there. And kind of the same for Brandon Phillips, even though he's a four-time gold glover. Brandon Phillips is kind of the same thing. I don't see the numbers being there for him to potentially...
He's a really awesome. He was a fun player to watch. Brandon Phillips is really good. But it's just Hall of Fame is the Hall of Fame. It's got to be best of the best.
Right.
There's just a different level, you know what I mean? I think he's a crowd favorite in Cincinnati. He had a really good career, but, you know, awesome crowd career, but it's the Hall of Fame. When you think of him, it's like at the end of – bad yes or no, it's just like, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer.
All right, hang on. Area code 314, you're on the air.
Hey, my name is James from Missouri. I was just wondering if you guys could quickly talk about the Survivor and what happened with Jeff.
Say what now?
Survivor? The TV series?
The TV show?
Yeah.
Yeah, our Survivor Recap podcast is actually on Thursday nights.
Oh, no, it was just a very quick question. It was breaking right now, so I was wondering if you guys had heard anything or know any insider stuff.
No.
Oh, okay, yeah. He was, Jeff, I guess, was caught on site fucking one of the monkeys?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. Fucking asshole. Sorry about that to anybody who may have heard that, but yeah, no.
Wow.
You know, I hate it when we get prank callers like that.
Not cool.
But anyways, where were we? Jose Reyes.
I think Matt Holliday.
You know,
Matt Holliday overall. Holliday's really good, but yeah, Phillips. I mean, Holliday, I think, had a better career. Yeah, he was buoyed. He was definitely lifted up a little bit, like everyone and their brother, because he played in, you know, Rocky Mountain High. He really was dominant as a Rocky. I just don't know if he gets in, though. You think Matt Holliday is a Hall of Famer?
Hang on just one second. I need to mark something here.
Okay.
Just so that I know that for reference. Because I have a feeling that same guy might call in for the Survivor podcast.
314.
Yeah, you know, for Holiday, I think it's possible he might be one of those borderline type of potential candidates, like somebody mm-hmm. who will stay on the ballot, but may not necessarily have enough votes at the end of it all.
Yeah. I tell you what, man, Holiday is, I know I've talked about him before, but, and you know a lot about minor league baseball too. I mean, apparently his son is going to be like the next big thing. And another Oriole, like better than Gunnar. He's Jackson Holiday, 18-year-old, and he hit like 350 in the minors. He's going to be, I don't know, we'll see. I thought Matt Holiday was really good. I like a lot of people. He slowed down though at the end, and I think a lot of his best stats were as a Rocky. That kind of hurts his case.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing, too, is that, you know, like you said, a lot of his best stats were as a Rocky, and, you know, down the line, he sort of slowly deteriorated a little bit.
Yeah, he did have some good years. I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years as a Cardinal. It's interesting. Almost, it's just like, hello, Nolan Arenado from Colorado to St. Louis. Arenado's kind of sustained it even better. He still has really good stats, but yeah, I don't know. I don't think Holiday can get in. I don't know. He's like he's close, but he's not. I don't think he does it.
Now, this next one, Jose Reyes, is kind of interesting because he doesn't have the home run power.
No.
You know, average, he batted .283, but he stole 517 bases. You know,
yeah,
he was known for having that elite speed.
Yeah, I don't think he did it for long enough. And I think David Wright, his best friend at the time and partner in crime, the left side of that is Matt Infield, was awesome. But he had the Mattingly luck where he just got decimated by injuries. Jose played longer, but, yeah, like you said, the home runs. I mean, again, he's almost like a better version of Brandon Phillips, but still not quite good enough. You know what I mean? Very, very good. Not Hall of Famer, to me at least.
Yeah. I had thought that maybe perhaps because of his speed, but yeah, you know, not
yeah.
really. Probably doesn't have the staying power, so to speak.
And I think not a big shock with another really good Matt who got crushed by injuries, but he definitely had a lot of injuries, too. I mean, but starting off in his career, man, people thought Wright and Reyes could be two of the best Mets ever and would have thought, you know, Hall of Famers, but yeah. And then Reyes had a domestic incident. Where did he, and he wind up going to the Marlins? Played second base a little bit. He kind of just a murky kind of weekend into his career. Kind of tarnished
yeah.
at the end.
James Shields, I'm not even going to entertain that idea because I know for a fact that James Shields, like literally, they're really going to entertain everybody potentially for the Hall of Fame here. 145 and 139 record, a 4 ERA. Are you really putting him on the Hall of Fame ballot? This guy isn't going to get any votes.
He was like Mr. Ray early on. He was awesome. And then just Lance Lynn. I mean, he just went up the deep end. I think he's a couple of his last years, he had like an 8 ERA, 9 ERA, pitching batting practice. Yeah, I don't know how he's on the ballot.
Yeah.
Not in this lifetime, Mr. Shields.
Let's see. Then you have Chase Utley. And Chase Utley, I mean, the average is average. You know, 275. He wasn't really he was more of a contact hitter as opposed to a power hitter. And I mean, he just doesn't have the stats, even though he's a longtime Philly. You know, maybe he'll be in the Philadelphia Phillies Hall of Fame, but
yeah.
I mean, I don't see Chase Utley. I'd be surprised, honestly, if he even stays on the ballot. So
once again, back injury. Like, if he has sustained his early domination, I mean, really, he was considered probably the best hitting second baseman, I think, for a little bit, for maybe 4 or 5 years. But then he started getting injured. I don't know what his overall stats were, but and then he became a Dodger. But I mean, I know early on he was awesome as a Philly. But yeah, I don't think overall. But once again, the toughest thing when the injuries hit. I think it really kind of slowed him down.
Right. Now, David Wright is the last potential newbie. And, I mean, the batting average is kind of there, 296. But, once again, another guy who is more known for his contact as opposed to home runs. You know, 7-time All-Star, 2-time Gold Glover, 2-time Silver Slugger. But he's basically just an average major leaguer. You know, I can't really say that the resume is really there for David Wright.
Nah, too many injuries.
Exactly. Now, I think the big question is with obviously, you know, all of the players having been taken off the ballot, like Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling and whatnot. Does Gary Sheffield make it in his final year of eligibility? He needs 20% more to make it this year.
Yeah, I was talking to him before. He was one of my favorite, one of the most dominating dangerous hitters for a while. I don't know if his longevity, if he sustained it for long enough. He played a lot of years, but yeah, I think he should get in. I would vote yes.
Yeah, you know, I was kind of, I'm kind of surprised that he has been on the ballot this long. I mean, 10 years. I mean, the hits are that, you know, 2,689 hits, 509 homers, 1,676 RBIs. You know, he's a former batting champion, a 9-time All-Star back when the All-Star, when All-Stars actually meant something. A 5-time Silver Slugger. He won the World Series back with the Marlins. You know, I mean, he's basically, and I don't believe he got popped, did he? He didn't get popped for steroids, I don't think.
No, I don't think he ever did, no.
So, you know, I mean, I can see why he has stuck around on the ballot when you consider, oh, okay, no, there were steroid allegations as he was named in the Mitchell report as one of the players who had obtained and used steroids. He was supposed to be interviewed, but before the report was published, no interview could be scheduled. And it hasn't been officially confirmed, but they claim that basically in order to help heal ripped stitches from a knee surgery, a cream was applied to his knee during a workout with Barry Bonds back in 2001. And Sheffield claims in his book, Inside Power, that he had no knowledge of the cream containing steroids whatsoever and had no reason to assume so at the time.
Oops.
And also, he,
yeah,
says, he goes on to say that the
doesn't
Creed...
sound good for him.
Yeah, and it also says as well that the cream did nothing to strengthen his knee, and also stated that a look at his numbers showed no improvement after the incident as well. So
yeah, I don't think it helps his case, but the controversy. But yeah, I'm not sure. I would vote him in, but that's kind of a blemish on his record.
So maybe perhaps then it'll be, maybe it'll end up being a, he may have to get in through the committee then.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah. I think numbers wise, he should get in, but it's going to take a little bit more work because of that controversy.
So, I mean, just honestly, looking at this lineup, I don't really see anybody that could get in this year.
Yeah, there's no surefire guy out of that list. I think Beltre is the closest, Adrian Beltre, but he's not a no-brainer.
Beltre?
I don't see anyone getting in on the first rip.
Beltre, maybe Maurer. Maybe Maurer, Sheffield, like I said, Sheffield, I just don't see him. I don't see him potentially having the length. Having to gain 20% extra, it seems like a huge hill to climb for his final attempt.
Yeah. That'd be too much of an uphill climb for him.
Yeah. We did have, staying in Major League Baseball here, we did have some free agent news. The Braves, they ended up signing Reynaldo Lopez to a 3-year, $30 million extension with a club option for 2024 after they previously acquired him off of waivers from the Los Angeles Angels. Or no. He was claimed off of waivers by the Guardians from the Angels. But it says here he's set to make $4 million next season with $11 million in 2025 and 2026. And he'll get either $8 million in 2027 or he will get a $4 million buyout, depending on what happens there. I believe, didn't they say something else about the Braves? No, you know what? I'm not thinking about the Braves. I'm thinking about the Cardinals, actually. The Cardinals had a couple of moves that they made this week, too. They brought back Lance Lynn on a 1-year, $10 million deal with a $12 million club option for 2025. In my opinion, I think that's way too much. For a guy like him, he's awful.
600 pounds. He's a dumpster fire. I wouldn't pay him at all to pitch on my staff if I were on the team. God bless those cards. That's just a weird, pretty weak-looking signing. How desperate are you for arms? I don't know. Guy is so inconsistent. He's impossible to predict how good he's going to be. Couldn't rely on that guy at all.
Just based off of what we saw last year, you know, I was still wondering why the hell they even signed him to be, or why the Dodgers even picked him up to begin with.
Yeah, his better days are far behind him. He's not getting any better. He's getting worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's not even, I wouldn't even want him on the Sox, I'll put it that way. I wouldn't, even with their pitching troubles, I would rather take a shot with Cutter Crawford or Josh Winkowski or any of our other pitchers than to put Lance Lynn out there and get fucking shelled every single outing.
Yeah, exactly.
They did also bring in Kyle Gibson on a one-year, $12 million deal with a club option for 2025. The 36-year-old veteran right-hander posted a serviceable 4.73 ERA across 192 innings, 33 starts last year for the Orioles. He's basically, at best, a fourth or fifth starter on that Cardinals roster. Let's see, what else did I see on the Cardinals? Oh, they also hired former Major League infielder Daniel Descalso to be their bench coach, a 10-year Major League veteran who last played in 2019 with the Chicago Cubs. Over his career, he posted a career .235 batting average while averaging 7 homers and 44 RBIs and 49 runs scored per 162 games. He played his first 5 major league seasons with the Cardinals and now will be reunited with the team that drafted him in the 3rd round of the 2007 MLB draft. As well, Joe McEwing will move to a special assistant role under President of Baseball Operations John Mozeliak to make room for Descalso. As well as since we're talking about managerial hires, the Red Sox, they hired former Red Sox pitcher Andrew Bailey to be their new pitching coach as he takes over for Dave Bush, who had held the position the past 3 years. And Bush obviously was fired last month at the conclusion of the 2023 season. One of the first significant hires for new president of baseball operations, Craig Breslow, who played a pivotal role in the Cubs' pitching plans the last few years. And also, it's worth noting that Andrew Bailey has served as the Giants' pitching coach for the last 3 seasons. So not only is he a former major leaguer, but he actually has experience as a pitching coach.
That's a good move.
So, in my opinion, you know, coming from a Red Sox fan, this is definitely a huge hire coming from new president of baseball operations, Craig Breslow. And you know, the guy is miles better than Dave Bush was.
Yeah, it's a good move. I like what they're doing so far with Breslow and company. It's looking sharp so far. They got a ways to go, but they've made some promising early, some good progress, I think, with some of these moves. They're heading in the right direction.
Yeah. Let's see, some other bits of managerial news. The Padres have hired Mike Schilt as their new manager. Oh, my God.
What's going on?
Oh, my God. Wait a minute. Is he CM Punk? Is on WWE television.
Nice.
I'm sorry, but this is the exact same thing they did with Bray Wyatt, where they waited for Bray Wyatt to make a return after the pay-per-view was about to end. And now Punk is officially out and back in the WWE, it seems. Holy shit.
Wow. Yep, they did it. They brought him back.
Holy shit. And he has his old graphics, too.
Return of the Punk.
He has his old graphics from when he was last with the WWE. I'm just trying to make sure I'm not seeing things here. Wow. Yeah, that's definitely for wrestling fans, this isn't a one-off, and hopefully he's here for good, because if he is, I said it was the wrong decision, but listening to it, to the reaction he's getting right now, this is the same. If this is going to be the same in every single arena, the WWE has made money. We'll put it that way.
Yeah, of course. Brought back a crowd favorite. Yes, it's rain spoon for them. Great move.
Because holy shit, did that roof explode. Wow, that may have been the best kept secret. That may have been the best kept secret I think that WWE has ever done.
Good move on a Saturday night. The big boost for ratings.
To end the show, no less.
Yeah. Good stuff.
And the thing is, too, he looked ecstatic to be back, too. You know how, like I said earlier, that he... You know, that he was tired of working with amateurs.
Yeah. Yeah, he's back. He's got to be thrilled.
That is, wow. Wow. I'm going to need to rewatch that once we get off of here tonight. I'm going to need to rewatch that to make sure I didn't just see things.
I'll have to check out the replay.
And, you know, it's a possibility, too, that they could bring back his wife as well, because his wife used to work for the company, too. His wife, AJ Lee. Is a former women's champion in the WWE. So it's entirely possible that she could be brought back too.
Nice. Yeah, might as well. Now that he's back, it would be fitting.
But needless to say, this reaction might have been bigger than the reaction that The Rock got when he returned originally.
Oh, definitely, yeah. I'll have to check it out. Sounds really cool.
Because, you know what, I'll send you the Twitter link right now, actually.
Nice.
But, I'm sorry, I know we were talking about Major League Baseball, but I felt I had to butt in with that because, you know, everybody was wondering, will he show up? Will he not show up? He showed up. He showed up, and I think now he has an axe to grind with AEW, too. So don't be surprised if all of a sudden he starts putting out his best work.
Yeah, he's coming back with a vengeance. The best be yet to come.
Oh, my God. Okay, what was I talking about? I was talking about, the Padres. The Padres, they hired Mike Schilt as their manager. A two-year deal. He managed the Cardinals, of course, for four seasons from 2018 to 2021, winning 55, almost 56% of his games as manager before spending the last 2 years as a senior advisor for the San Diego Padres. He takes over for San Diego following last month's sudden departure of Bob Melvin to the division rival Giants. He inherits a squad that seems to be in the midst of a transitional phase, especially from roster composition and overall payroll standpoint, following a brutally disappointing year this past year. And by the way, look for Juan Soto to be dealt, just put it that way. I find it highly likely that Juan Soto gets dealt. I know people were saying maybe perhaps, you know, what's his name would get dealt. Fernando Tatis Jr. would get dealt.
Yeah, they're bleeding money. They need money. They need to shed payroll. They're getting rid of Soto for sure.
Yeah, I would say if anything, Soto is definitely the likeliest to be dealt out of all the players that they have available. Let's see. Whew. Wow. I just gotta say I'm completely caught off guard from that from watching that. The New York Yankees, they have found their next bench coach, Brad Ausmus, the former Astros manager, has officially – or no, wait a minute. No, not Astros, the Tigers manager, and he was also an Angels manager back in 2019. Wait a minute. Didn't he play for the Astros, Ausmus?
Yeah, he was a catcher for them.
That's what I thought. But he joins Aaron Boone's staff after spending the last 2 years in the Oakland Athletics organization split between a bench coach and a front office role. Needless to say, it came out of left field because I don't think his name was even – I don't think his name was even in consideration. Or at least – at least it wasn't brought up at all. Let's see. The Los Angeles Angels, they hired Barry Enright to be their pitching coach after he worked for the Diamondbacks the last 3 years as their pitching coach, most recently spending the last 2 years as Brent Strom's assistant pitching coach on the big league staff. The former big leaguer logged parts of two different seasons with the Angels from 2012 and 2013. He is the newest addition to manager Ron Washington's coaching staff out in Los Angeles heading into this upcoming season. With that being said, though, I think we're going to probably close it out for tonight. So,
yeah, I know.
I'm sure there's going to be a huge bit to discuss about that next week. But like I said, you know, originally we weren't supposed to have a show tonight. We ended up having a show. So we will be back though. I know Lou is gonna join us next week as well. Obviously, he was off to due to family. I guess he had family over or something. We will be back next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly. Thank you, Alex, for joining me tonight.
Yeah, good show.
A reminder, Survivor fans, Thursday night. Now, obviously, we had the Survivor podcast last night, but we will be back Thursday night for the Survivor 45 recap show. But yeah, everybody have a great rest of your Thanksgiving weekend, and we will see you guys this upcoming Thursday night for another edition of the Survivor 45 recap show, and next Saturday night for another edition of Sports Whispers Weekly.